Good evening. It is Thursday night, April 30th, 2020, and this is Ozarks at Large on 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Quick reminder, you can find Ozarks at Large as a podcast at Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. You can also tell your smart speaker to play Ozarks at Large. On tonight's show, how's your hair? As salons, barbershops, and beauty parlors' doors stay closed, some folks are considering a trim. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda talks with one stylist, helping out with virtual suggestions. You can hear the latest news regarding COVID-19 from around the country and from around the world tonight, beginning at 8 on KUAF. Each weeknight at 8, All Things Considered and NPR provide a live national conversation about the pandemic. Tonight's session begins right after this evening edition of Ozarks at Large. At this afternoon's press briefing, Governor Asa Hutchinson discussed the reopening of exercise facilities, the money in the state's Arkansas Ready for Business grant program, and the latest numbers regarding infection in the state. The governor says in the 24-hour period between briefings, there were 63 new diagnoses of COVID-19 in the state, bringing the cumulative total to 3,255. There were an additional two deaths, bringing that total to 61. The governor was asked several questions about the millions of dollars made available through the Arkansas Ready for Business Grants Program announced at yesterday's press briefing to help businesses prepare to reopen under the rules also announced yesterday for the return to inside dining. The governor says due to a communication error, the program's website was rolled out prematurely before official Legislation Council approval had taken place.
The gun was jumped on that and the website went live. And it was a typical rollout because as you present a new grant program, you want to make sure that as many stakeholders as are possible are aware of that. And so those steps were taken. So it was not an issue of favoritism. It was a matter of this is how you get information out about a new small business grant program.
The governor says once it was realized the site went active too soon, it was then taken down until there was approval. In all, the grant program attracted more than 2,300 businesses applying for grants totaling more than $36 million. There was $15 million in the program budget, and the 2,300 applications came into the site in under an hour. The governor says 92% of the applicants have fewer than 50 employees, and 59% of the applicants have fewer than 10 employees. The governor also says the state might seek more funding from the legislature for the program. The governor established May 4th, Monday, as a day to reopen gyms and exercise facilities in the state. There will be symptom screening for staff and patrons, no entry for recent travelers to COVID-19 hotspots like New York and New Orleans. Gyms will not be able to operate pools, spas, or showers, and there must be 12-foot distancing during workouts and training. The governor says the state is not prepared to resume team sport activities.
We're not ready to re-engage those yet, and so we'll have to take another look at teen and youth sports in mid to late May. And of course, right now we have a directive that prohibits those through May 31st, but we want to give some advance notice for everyone so they can plan the future.
The rules for gyms and exercise facilities also stipulate there must be hand sanitizer available for customers and equipment must be sanitized after each use. And after a pair of briefings over the last 48 hours that have devoted significant time to discussion of some businesses reopening to some degree, the governor says the state is far from back to normal.
Just because we're lifting some restrictions and opening up opportunities for us to start moving back to a more normal, we still want to maintain our downward curve. We want to be able to reduce the spread in Arkansas. And to do that, we have to have everyone appropriately socially distanced. We need everybody to still take this very seriously and not think, well, they're opening something up, so everything's back to normal. We still, as emphasized, wear our face mask when we can't socially distance. We want to maintain those distances so we can protect ourselves and protect others and protect our loved ones.
The press briefings can be viewed in their entirety at the governor's YouTube channel. KUAF will carry tomorrow's press briefing, scheduled for 1:30. Last week, Governor Hutchinson said he would announce procedures regarding hair salons and barbershops during the May 1st, tomorrow briefing. This is Ozarks at Large. It isn't difficult to find information these days. The problem is the information can be flat out wrong or even harmful sometimes. Information is just one component of a class about the pandemic the University of Arkansas Honors College will offer students remotely May 11th through the 22nd. Several different instructors will lead the classes, including Governor Asa Hutchinson. Over the next several days, we'll be talking to many of those instructors. And today we start with Brian Primack, the Dean of the College of Education and Health Professions at the University of Arkansas. He'll address the information overload we've experienced during the pandemic in a session titled Media, Perception, and Behavior. He says the virus and information shared during this time have something in common.
It's an interesting irony that in parallel with this virus, we have viral information that spreads that, you know, can actually cause a lot of potential problems alongside of the other problems that we're having that are directly related to the virus. So as an example, if someone has, you know, very poor information about what is going on or how it spread, then they might not be able to protect themselves as well. In addition, you know, there's also just this issue of the very tricky balance when it comes to getting information about something like this. In some ways, we need to get information and we need to understand the seriousness of complying with physical distancing and all of the other things that public health people recommend. But on the other hand, we also know that when people overexpose themselves to constant negative news that isn't really providing new information, that it may actually have psychiatric and psychological damage that comes along with it. An example of that was after 9/11, there was a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA, that showed that the people who had the most post-traumatic stress disorder after the tragic events of 9/11 were actually not the people that were in the building at the time. It was the people that watched the most television during the 3 days after the event. So even if you were living in Iowa, far away from the event, didn't have family involved, if you were glued to that television screen, that actually became larger than life for you. So for us in public health, it becomes a very tricky balance to try to get appropriate information to people, but to also encourage them to have some balance and equanimity in their lives.
That's the tightrope, right? Because especially, say, with a pandemic where you're hearing that it's very contagious and they're, what am I going to do to protect my family, my parents, my children? You do want information. And unlike the first 3 days after 9/11, there are so many other sources that are 24/7 that you can click on or tune into and hear something. So you have this desire to get the information, but it's so hard, especially early, to filter out what is truth, what is not, and even some of the things that are spread by reputable people change over the first few days.
Exactly. And I think that that idea of change is particularly important here. Complicating factor here. After 9/11, you know, there was this one event, and yes, things were changing in terms of information was getting out, but here the information is changing every day. Every day we have some new policy that we need to be thinking of or some new theory related to how we combat this, or some new idea that scientists have discovered that might lead to a vaccine or a treatment. And so it becomes even that much harder to walk that tightrope of information where we want people to know these things, but we also want them to, you know, not let it completely take over their lives and make them unnecessarily anxious.
What about false equivalencies, right? I mean, those can be rampant. This is no worse than the flu, or X number of people drown every year and we don't shut down the country. Those sorts of things can weigh on people as well, can't they?
Yes, absolutely. And it's a really good point. There is a lot of information out there, and you can always find a statistic in some way to support what you are thinking. So someone can easily say, well, you know, look, a few years ago, 646,000 people died from the flu. And so isn't this not as bad as that? But the fact is that if you then take that in the context of the fact that, you know, this is still developing and it's much more contagious and the case fatality rate is much higher and, you know, so many other things about this particular situation, that other factoid doesn't become as important, as real. So, you know, you're absolutely right that even when, you know, there's a lot of sheer misinformation out there, but even when something is based on real information, there are all of these contextual things that we need to think about that might help us through this particular issue and help us understand it better. And that's the kind of thing that we're going to be talking to our students about in this course in May.
Yeah, and I know that you can just have the overload. Someone can put on Facebook or gosh, I even heard this shared on a semi-reputable media outlet, microwave your mail, or the virus can live on the soles of your shoes, or your pets can have it. I mean, and I wonder if part of the danger is you get so much overload, you just say, you know what, to heck with it. I don't know what to believe, so I'm just going to keep on going.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, and to that point, a recent survey showed that about 30% of people think that the virus was created in a laboratory, either as a bioweapon, and actually most people of that 30%, it's 23% that of all people believe that this was in this one survey, at least, believe that it was created as a bioweapon in a Chinese laboratory. And this has been shown to be inaccurate based on the DNA of the actual virus. But people still believe it, and it leads to, you know, all kinds of, you know, potential problems, you know, geopolitical problems. A number of other people believe that it escaped from a Chinese laboratory. So maybe it was just accidental, but they still believe that it was created rather than just something that passed from an animal to a human. That's also a problem. There are many people who still believe that it is related to 5G cell phone towers.
Right.
And so these are the kinds of things that we'll be going through each of these vignettes with our students and talking about, you know, how did this information get out there? How and why did it get passed? And how can we in the future get better, more accurate information to people in the face of challenges like this?
If there are silver linings in all this, is that one that maybe collectively we become a bit more skeptical or a bit more interested in separating the truth wheat from the fictional chaff?
Yeah, I would say that if we come out of this and people are you know, people are more savvy with regard to you know, the media that they consume, the messages that they consume, I do think that that would be a positive thing. And as you say, part of it is, I think, some skepticism, but part of it is also tools. Mm. In other words, thinking very carefully, okay, I see this message. Who is the author? Who actually wrote this? Because when we see something on a web page, we may or may not see an author the way we do on on the cover of a book or something like that. And so if people are thinking a little bit more about, okay, who's the author? And then maybe who's the intended audience? You know, why is it that they are putting this message out? Are they just creating a shocking message because they're trying to get more advertising revenue because of these ads that I see on the side of the page? Well, that's the kind of thing that, yes, I think makes the person a little more skeptical, but also just a little bit more informed. And then related to that, even deeper, there are things about the message itself that people can, you know, get, I think, a little bit more savvy at analyzing. What are the techniques that this person is using? Ah, they're using fear because they know that fear will bring me back tomorrow. So then if you're a little bit more conscious about that, you might be less likely to just internalize that fear and then have that make you just pass along the message, and instead to say, ah, I think I understand a little bit more of what's going on here. Let me now try to do a little bit more assessment of, you know, what's real about this, but what's also being omitted. You know, what's the difference between the representation here and the reality here? So I think you're absolutely right that this deals with a kind of literacy that we hope that people are going to, you know, have, and, you know, in the face of crises like this, but also in the course of their everyday life. I mean, we hope that young people will see advertisements for, say, unhealthy products. This is something that we do in public health, and that they will think a little bit more critically about those. And so if we're able to teach a little bit more of those tools now during this crisis and have them stick, I think that that would be an overall benefit.
It sounds so delicate, though, because people could hear our conversation and say, yeah, it's selling fear, when major networks were telling me in late January or early February, they just wanted me to watch, right? Even so, you could hear real information, think they're selling fear, and reject it, and say, I'm going to go on with my life. Do you remember the game Operation where you had to pull something out with tweezers? And if you just missed it, it reminds me of that. You've got to pull out the nugget of real information without touching the side and setting off the alarm.
Yes, and like that game, it's basically impossible. You know, you're always going to, and maybe that is one of the lessons of it, is that you're always going to touch the side a little bit. And so maybe, you know, we're always going to have a little bit of a mistake. I mean, you're absolutely right that at the beginning of this, there was a lot of downplaying. I mean, I certainly didn't know what this was going to become. Even though I'm, you know, supposedly a public health expert, because, you know, we didn't have information about the case fatality rate. We didn't have the information about the R naught, the number, just how that represents how infectious it is, that kind of thing. And sometimes it goes the other direction.
Right.
Back in the, you know, several years ago, for the H1N1, you know, was an important consideration for the public health world. A lot of people went too far. Mm-hmm. And there was sort of there a lot of unnecessary fear. And it turned out to be, you know, sort of a bad cold, and really not to, you know, not to cause a lot of public health problems the way this one did. And so the information and the fear there was probably overblown. And so I think for this one, a lot of people that were around for H1N1 thought, oh, this is going to be another H1N1. Let's not overblow things. But then, you know, all of a sudden information starts coming out and we realize it really is a problem. So it's sort of akin in your game of Operation to saying, you know what, we're going to accidentally touch that side and then maybe that side, but we still need to keep going and still try to get that nugget of information, and hopefully eventually we'll get at least as close as we can.
There is the risk, I think, that if the social distancing works as well as public health and many elected officials want it to, the rates will be lower than those initial estimates, right? And then you run the risk of people who were skeptical of it or didn't believe it to begin with think, oh, well, see, it wasn't so bad. And it's just this ongoing sort of jungle of information and what you believe and how you apply that to your personal life.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's going to, it would be nice to think that, okay, now we know basically everything there is to know about this, but you're absolutely right that it's going to continue to be a we need to realize at one that at any given moment we probably only know about half of the truth or even less. I remember at the beginning of medical school, one of my professors, got up in the front and, welcomed us all. And isn't it so exciting that you're here? And then he, sort of paused and says, I want to tell you something that's a little bit scary. Half of what we're going to teach you over the next 4 years is wrong. Mm. But we just don't know which half. And I think that that kind of thing applies here. We need to do the best we can with the information that we have, but we also need to continue to be resilient when it comes to information. We need to continue to be thoughtful and savvy when it comes to information, realizing that we're going to have to jettison some of those things that we believed before, because new information is going to come out. And it becomes, all of the various metaphors that we've been discussing. It becomes like walking a tightrope. It becomes like playing a game of Operation. And it's just something that we need to continue to be ready to, move forward with our beliefs, which, of course, at this time, in history is difficult for people. There's a lot of research showing that people basically look for the information out there that confirms their belief and aren't open to sort of other possibilities. And that is going to be a challenge, especially in this particular case.
Dr. Brian Primack is Dean of the College of Education and Health Professions at the University of Arkansas, and he will lead one of the sessions of the U of A Honors College course, Pandemic, next month. The Pandemic Forum will take place May 11th through the 22nd. The Honors College will provide free public access to the forum by posting a recording of each class online. Go to honorscollege.uark.edu/pandemic. Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, we'll talk with Trish Starks, professor of history and history of medicine, about the session she'll lead titled Quarantine and Plague. This is Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Community Creative Center now offers take and make art kits for home creativity. These kits offer pre-made ceramics for decorating, loom weaving, or embroidery. Supplies and directions provided. Ordering and information available at communitycreativecenter.org with curbside pickup at CCC in Fayetteville, or any remote Wheelmobile location in Northwest Arkansas.
It's been 7 weeks since the pandemic officially arrived in the natural state, and many Arkansans are finding themselves in need of a haircut. Hair salons and barbershops remain closed for now, but Governor Asa Hutchinson is expected to make an announcement tomorrow regarding the possibility of lifting restrictions on those businesses. For those who'd like to trim their hair in the meantime, a Northwest Arkansas stylist is offering some assistance. Earlier this week, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda spoke via Zoom with hairstylist Scarlett Howell to learn how she's helping clients maintain their hair during the pandemic. To begin their conversation, Howell discussed her career prior to the governor's closure of salons.
I'm at a little space in South Fayetteville called Shine Salon. I work with a wonderful woman named Sunshine Broder, and she's been in that space for 14 years, and I've been working with her for 2.
And so what was it like for you when the directive started coming down that you were going to have to close?
We actually ended up closing about 10 days before we were required to. Sunshine and I have like a good banter that goes on. It's just the two of us there. So it's usually like 4 people in there. And so we all kind of like chit chat and talk to each other. And we started realizing how serious it was getting other places. And she sent me a video, and I'm sure a lot of people have seen this one, where it was Italians were asked what they would have told themselves 10 days ago, like the advice they would have given themselves. And so she sent that to me, and we start, we had a long conversation. We were just like, if we like love and care about the people of this community that like support us, we have to close. You know, it wasn't ever about us. It was about other people. You know, we have clients that are going through chemo, and we have clients that are immunocompromised. We have clients that are older. We have clients with heart issues and, you know, all of that. And like the thought of being the place where they got exposed to that, we just couldn't do it.
And so how did you come up with the idea of helping your clients cut their hair virtually?
So the hair industry is like kind of polarizingly split right now. There are people, like there are hairdressers that are like, don't touch your hair, don't cut your bangs, don't color your own hair, like just wait for me. And there are others that are just like, things are weird right now. Who am I to tell you what you need to do to help you feel better? I know I feel a lot better after I've gotten my hair done. I feel like I can take on the world if I don't have any roots and my coffee table is clean. Like those are, you know, those are places that I get like a sense of strength from in a weird way. So I started looking at trying to find online resources for my clients, whether it's something that I've filmed or something that another stylist or barber has filmed to help get them through that. Every Monday, I send out an email to my clients, kind of like updating them on things, putting in any resources that I find, putting in like weird things, like, you know, like right now, virtual Jazz Fest is happening. So I like sent links to that. You know, people are going to do what they want to do one way or the other. And it's not my job to shame anybody. That's never been my job. That's never what I want to have in my chair. So whatever I can do to help them through this. And I know it's not, I'm not going to be able to do everything for them. Like I'm not going to be able to teach them how to highlight their own hair. But, you know, there's a company that I'm working with and they're sending root retouch kits for like gray coverage. And that goes directly to their house. And, you know, so it's like, here, let's hop on Zoom and let me like walk your daughter through doing your root touch up. Or let me walk you through cutting your partner's hair. Let me walk you through cleaning up your husband's neckline or cutting your kid's hair. And I think a lot of people are hesitant to do that because they think it's going to like make them less valuable in a weird way. But I don't think that at all. I think it's going to make people more grateful to like come into a salon and actually like have a service done.
Is it strange for you to be watching and not have the scissors in your hand?
I guess I can imagine that it's a similar feeling when you're a driver's ed teacher. And so you have two wheels, you have two sets of gas pedals and brake pedals, and you just want to like hover over it, you know, but like, you know, we're all doing the best with what we've got. And so it's mostly just, is it going to be like what I can do for you in the salon? No, it's not. But is it going to be a lot better than if you just like went at it? Yes. Yes, it is. Because I can tell you how to hold your hand. I can tell you how to turn the tool in a different way. I can tell you how to navigate around the ears or, you know, like, hey, you know, your husband has like a really big cowlick right here. So we're going to like let that, we're going to leave that alone and we're going to come back to that later. Because going in and actually cutting hair is a lot more like shaping a bonsai tree than it is like cutting out a shape. It's a round, a mostly round 360 degree thing. And so you're looking at negative and positive space. And if you don't know that, that's where like some super hazardous haircuts can come into play.
And you're doing this for free?
So I normally charge hourly as a hairstylist, but I am not actually charging for this. I am like, I'm accepting gratuity, like virtually via PayPal, because I know that there's a lot of people who don't have jobs right now. And let's say like stuff really gets intense and like maybe you need to apply for a job, maybe you want to go, you know, it's about the community and it's about taking care of the people who've taken care of me and have supported my business and supported me. And so it's, I'm incredibly appreciative of anything that my clients have given me, but it's Lanyap. It's a bonus. It's not required.
Nobody really knows what the future holds right now, but what are your plans moving forward?
There's so much research to do. Georgia came out with a list of recommended requirements, strange wording, and it's 8 pages long for what the new reality of in salon life will be. We work in a small space. We work in 400 square feet. We'll have to move things around. We'll have to take things out of the space. A lot of people are struggling to find PPE in order to do these jobs that are so close. Gloves, masks, bleach, wipes, you know, Lysol, all of that. A lot of hairdressers are taking temperatures at the door. People are being asked to wait in their cars until it's okay to come in again. I think there's going to be a long trek back to normal experiences in the salon. I will no longer be able to double book. I will no longer be able to offer you beverages. I need to call my insurance agent to see how much my insurance is going to go up to have extra coverage in case somebody does get sick. We won't be able to work at the same time for the most part. So our schedules will have to change. I won't be able to work the way I was. A lot of the luxury side of what I did is not going to be able to be an option anymore. Like, you're not supposed to wax faces at all. Like, you're not supposed to put hot towels on people. I'm supposed to cover your face with a towel while I shampoo you. I'm not supposed to blow dry your hair because the blow dryer pushes all of those across the salon and it could reach other people. It could reach other surfaces. So there's a lot of gray area in this right now. And with Georgia reopening, I feel for them. I feel for those stylists because a lot of them have not had any source of income in the intermediate. But I think I'm incredibly grateful to them because I think we're going to learn a lot about what is possible and what is not. Sunshine and I decided that when it is mandated or when like the mandate is lifted, when we're able to go back to work, we will not be the first people to reopen. We're really going to wait and make sure that we have systems in place to help protect ourselves and to help protect our clients. It's a lot to learn. We miss everybody. We miss everybody a ton. And when things are safe and when we feel like we can do things for everyone again, that's not going to put anybody at risk. Like, we're really looking forward to seeing everyone.
Scarlett, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. I really appreciate it.
No problem. I'm glad to.
That was Scarlett Howell, a hairstylist at Shine Salon in Fayetteville. She spoke with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda via Zoom earlier this week. And ahead on today's show, why people want to start jobs even during a global pandemic.
I think that there's going to be some failures where they're going to be able to pick up assets and people perhaps a little bit more effectively. So there is money out there, and there are investments being made.
A conversation about new business in an odd time on this week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report with Paul Gatling. This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us on this last day of April 2020. Here's to a much better May, right? We're near the end of the sixth, maybe seventh work week, draped in unusual routines, workspaces, and concerns. We're staying in contact with everyone in different ways too, right? And one way we're hearing from you is through our KUAF Connects phone line. That number is 479-575-6577. We're interested to know how you're doing during this pandemic. Most recently, we've encouraged you to tell us about perhaps something new in your life since the onset of the virus, hobby, skill, personal revelation. Here is some of what you have shared with us in the past couple of days.
My name is Peter Horton. I'm calling from Rogers, Arkansas. And lately, I've been making sounds for sleeping on YouTube under the name Cloudwave ASMR Sleep Sounds. I have a long history with insomnia, and I found that soothing soundscapes really help. They help a lot of people. They help me, certainly, when I can't sleep. So I hope that helps some people. Cloudwave ASMR Sleep Sounds is how you find it on YouTube. Thank you. Bye.
My name is Rob Button, and I live in Southeast Fayetteville, and I work in Western Springdale. I am a registered nurse. I work for an agency that provides services to a community of people with disabilities, and I also work in a long-term care facility. And since all of my extracurricular activities, scouts, lacrosse, church, are all on hiatus at the moment, I've got lots of time to pick up extra shifts. However, I am also really enjoying putting a lot of time and energy into my garden. I've expanded it quite a bit, adding some fruit to it. And I've actually gone home on lunch today because there's a big storm coming. So I had to go and protect some of my seedlings. So that's what I'm doing here in the coronavirus time.
This is Lowell Collins from Bentonville. I have a new hobby of building Legos. It started when I was cleaning closets, but then when I found all of my son's Legos, I started building, and I can't seem to stop. It's very compelling, and each project gets completed, and then you see another one, and I start building another one. It's a little like doing a jigsaw puzzle, kind of therapeutic and peaceful.
If you are doing something new in the garden, on YouTube, or at the kitchen table that's therapeutic or peaceful, let us know. Your new hobby or skill could just be a big help to somebody else. And if you have trouble sleeping, maybe Cloudwave ASMR Sleep Sounds, direct from Northwest Arkansas, could help you. That's from a 49-minute sleeping assist titled Godzilla Sleeping Ambience that you can find at the YouTube channel Cloudwave ASMR Sleep Sounds. This is Ozarks at Large. Oh, and once again, the KUAF Connects number, let's hear from you, 479-575-6577.
I'm Paul Gatling, and this is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Glad to have you with us today. There is not nearly enough data yet to predict what healthcare ramifications will occur months or even years from now as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. But a healthcare staffing executive in Rogers says he does see a data trend that may signal a significant shift is taking shape, and it could be a boon to healthcare sectors in mostly rural states, like Arkansas and its approximately 3 million residents. Joe Goddard of Rogers is the founding owner and managing partner of Cardinal Healthcare Group. It's a national company that recruits healthcare providers. Through his work, he has identified a trend indicating a, quote, mass exodus of healthcare providers who are seeking new opportunities away from major metro areas of the U.S. and into smaller, less urban areas. It's the subject of our cover story in the new issue of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal. To find out more, head on over to nwabusinessjournal.com, where you'll find that story plus the digital version of the latest issue for free. We're going to take a quick time out and come back with more news on this edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
People often have many reasons why they want to start a new business. On a recent episode of Talk Business and Politics, Roby Brock caught up with Wayne Miller, who is director of the Venture Center in Little Rock. The Venture Center is a business-focused nonprofit organization that serves as an early-stage startup acceleration and investment firm. Here now is Wayne Miller to discuss whether or not now, in the midst of a global pandemic, is still a good time to start a new business?
I think it's an interesting time. There are clearly some opportunities that are arising out of this COVID-19 crisis. You know, I think if we just sort of take a look around at what historically have been technologies that people have been slow to adopt, you know, let's take a look at telemedicine right now. What a great example of how a technology that's been really sitting in the background for some period of time, and there's been challenges with it, with adoption due to obviously a number of issues, but we've actually helped to relax some of the regulatory requirements around this technology. And, you know, as you and I were talking earlier today, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, and we're seeing that sort of adoption occur. We're seeing similar things in banking, right? I think some of this is demographic, right, as it relates to age and location in terms of these things. But, you know, digital applications for things like remote deposit or new account opening or how we're dealing with investments and wealth and so forth, we also suspect that as a result of this, you know, we recognize a large percentage of our population does live paycheck to paycheck. We're seeing that is the evidence of that has never been greater than it is today with this crisis and what's happened to small business in our country and business as a whole. But we think we'll see some interesting technologies and results that are coming from a focus on helping with things like financial wellness and so forth. So adoption of some delivery and service options that, you know, we hadn't really thought about quite as deeply before. You know, I think the boomers are always kind of quick to order a pizza, but now they're getting their groceries too. So I think there is an opportunity here without question.
You talk constantly with people who are in the venture capital world, who are in the startup investment world. What are they telling you about the current environment? What does the money say?
Great question. You know, it's interesting. Actually, yesterday, we're currently in a recruiting campaign right now for our next financial technology accelerator with FIS, kind of coming down the home stretch for that, which we will likely begin virtually this year. But we've been on the phone quite a bit with venture capitalists. The outreach, in fact, lately has seemed to increase a bit, not so much from the angel community, although we do see some good things happening in Arkansas there with this Central Arkansas Angels Network. Last night, in fact, 25 people on that call listening to a couple of pitches. So there's clearly an interest there. But from a venture center, from a venture capital perspective, rather, it's very clear that these VCs do have capital. They have funds. They have money that they want to deploy. I would suggest that some of them are looking for some bargains. I think there's going to be some issues as it relates to valuation. I think that there's going to be some failures where they're going to be able to pick up assets and people perhaps a little bit more effectively. So there is money out there, and there are investments being made. The other thing I think is the venture community has been pretty decent in how to instruct some of these early stage companies that have a limited amount of financial runway, how to kind of keep their powder dry and what they should be doing right now in regard to what's happening with this crisis.
You mentioned health and medicine earlier. You mentioned banking and finance as well. What are some other business areas where you think there might be some opportunities that would be ripe for someone to start up a new company in a particular space?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a great question. You know, there's a three-letter acronym now that I'll use, and you'll know what it is. It's called WFH, right? I didn't know what that was a week ago, but I guess that's work from home now, right? So one of the questions that I think is coming out is how do we help people be more effective, more productive, and do the right things from the standpoint of working at home? So I think there are some opportunities for businesses there from everything from health and wellness and exercising, that sort of thing, to how we establish desks and home offices, how we work with our families who are present, et cetera. So I think there's some things there. You know, listen, there's some crazy ideas out there. Remember, you probably remember this as I did. There was actually a point in time where we used to go to the drive-in movie theater, right? So there's an idea for you that might come back in a big way. Gaming and sports. I think there's some interesting opportunities there. We are all thirsty to see athletics and to see competitive sports. How are we going to make that experience better virtually? I don't know the answer to that, but I'm confident there's people out there working on it. You know, casinos need us to attend in order for them to make money. Virtual gaming has been something that's been pretty interesting and actually set some significant returns for people who have made investments there. But will technologies also further support that and see that industry increase? I think we also have to question education right now. I've talked to you about this before. I think education is ripe for technological adventure, I think is probably the best word, as opposed to venture. And what I mean by that is, you know, we teach everybody the same, right? But we all learn differently. And I always have believed that technology will help us make that better for the different ways in which we learn. But, you know, we're really having to build that airplane while we're flying it right now in terms of getting these kids up to speed and keeping them educated and so forth, and putting together lesson plans and working with a variety of teleconferencing approaches, et cetera. So I think there's going to be some interesting progress that's made there that I'm hopeful will make these kids, keep them on track, both, you know, not just the kids, but obviously from the standpoint of college and graduate school, et cetera. There's some real opportunity there. So those are some thoughts.
And that is Wayne Miller with the Venture Center in Little Rock. There is more of that interview with Roby Brock online at our sister website, talkbusiness.net. They spoke on a recent episode of Talk Business and Politics, and that program airs each Sunday morning at 10:30 on KFSM Channel 5. In other news, the COVID-19 pandemic buckled the U.S. home building sector in March, but had little impact on residential construction activity in Northwest Arkansas. Home building activity in the region's four largest cities was up 4% in March. According to the latest data, housing starts in the U.S. dropped more than 22% last month. That was the largest monthly decline since March of 1984. Rope Swing Hospitality Group in Bentonville has launched a meal subscription service. It allows customers to receive up to 5 home-delivered meals weekly from the Walton-backed organization's restaurants. The meals change each week, and the food is from Bentonville restaurants The Preacher's Son, Press Room, and Louise. And healthcare entities across Northwest Arkansas will receive more than $3 million in aid as part of an effort by the Northwest Arkansas Council, supported by several local business and philanthropic partners. Combined financial and in-kind donations from J.B. Hunt, Rev Unit, Walmart Foundation, and the Walton Family Foundation will help support healthcare organizations in Northwest Arkansas in response to the COVID-19 crisis. For those stories and more, visit our website at nwabusinessjournal.com, where you'll find the latest business headlines each and every day. And that is all for this edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, we'll catch up on another week of the pandemic in the news with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics. We'll find out how the Marshallese community in Northwest Arkansas is being affected by the virus and learn some history about plagues and quarantines as we continue our series of conversations with instructors for the upcoming University of Arkansas Honors College course, Pandemic. Ozarks at Large, tomorrow at noon and 7 on 91.3.
That's David Chesky in the background playing Duke's Groove. And I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday. We'll hear more from David Chesky as well as Project Them, Gary Burton, Cecile McLaurin-Salvant, Bobby McFerrin, and more. All that this week on Shades of Jazz, right here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Morrow. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to tonight's show included Antoinette Grajeda. Timothy Dennis mastered this Thursday evening show. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal with Paul Gatling is part of our collaboration with Talk Business and Politics. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for making us part of your Thursday. We will be back with you tomorrow at noon and 7 for a brand new Friday edition of the show. Be well, get rest. We'll talk soon.